why can't the other dead characters come back to life? Why can only certain dead characters come back to life?
I can't wait for this. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Culture Time. I'm Hemel Javeri, along with Brian Minter.
Hello. It is really good to be back here with you in your lavishly appointed podcasting studio talking about Avengers Infinity War.
We're talking about Avengers Endgame.
Oh, I didn't see that. Is it good?
It might be. Yeah, it was pretty good.
I'll have to check it out.
If you are a regular listener of Culture Time, we've wrapped up our Keanu season, and this is a special bonus episode because we can't not talk about Endgame. All right, so let's start with a quick summary.
What happens in the movie Avengers Endgame?
5 years have passed since Thanos' death.
I hate to interrupt immediately, but the 5 years thing was so dumb to me. It was such an unnecessary storytelling choice.
Okay, I don't agree with that. But before we get into
sorry.
We're going to get into, listen, let me, for the love of God, try to summarize the film.
Good luck.
All right, so we pick up right after Infinity War. Tony Stark makes it back to Earth. Captain Marvel rescues him. They have a half-assed plan to go defeat Thanos that doesn't work. And eventually what happens is that 5 years pass.
5 years pass, dumb.
Well, they kill Thanos.
Great bit.
Yeah, that was great.
They chop his head off. Right in the top of the movie.
But it doesn't change anything. They don't bring anybody back. So they've got 5 years of wallowing that has to be done. And then there's a whole bunch of time travel stuff that happens. And what happens in the end is that they get all the Infinity Stones. There is a giant battle.
A giant battle. Which is basically copy-pasted from previous movies.
It's like a clip show. And Tony Stark is the one who eventually brings everybody back by making his own Infinity Glove, snapping his fingers, and dies in the process.
A fitting choice for that character, I think, as I believe you have observed in one of our nation's finer newspapers.
Yes. So that's basically the plot. The structure of this podcast, we're going to wait until the end to talk about time travel because
there's no chance of that happening.
I think it's going to devolve into
chaos. I admire
your
plan. But it doesn't seem feasible.
Because it's going to devolve into chaos. But what I want to do is first ask if the movie worked for you or it didn't work for you. And then I want to take us through each of the individual character arcs.
All right. So, I can bitch at great length about any number of problems the movie had.
Right.
But I would say overall, it did work.
Okay.
And I enjoyed it.
Okay. That's a very quick answer. I will say that the first time I saw it, I was not sure how I felt.
How many times have you seen it?
I saw it twice.
Okay. It's three hours long, you know.
I had some time.
It's a brisk 3 hours, though. I didn't hold that against it.
I think that I liked it, but I might not like it in the future. I think that for me, Endgame is going to be one of the films that does not hold up really well because of all the questions that you do have. I don't think that I'm going to be able to get over them.
I see.
Yeah. So I did like it. My first initial viewing experience was really emotional and I thought it was really funny. And I think that the bits that worked really well. But unfortunately, the stuff that didn't work was very off-putting.
It was a sad film, as you said. Like,
yes.
I thought they really committed to, like, the sort of elegiac tone.
Yes. I actually really appreciated the sadness of it.
One thing I thought was cool about it overall, movies should stand on their own, right? Like,
yes.
One of the things why I didn't like Captain Marvel is because the movie, internal to itself, did not try to convince the viewer. They didn't try to explain the relationships or make us care about the characters. They just took it for granted, like, oh, they already care about some of these people from another movie.
Yeah.
So we're going to coast on that, which is terrible. But what this movie did that shouldn't have worked but did was you had to have seen all those movies. You had
every
to know what
one.
These relationships are. They leaned into that so hard that I perversely respected them for it.
Yeah, they literally did not care if you had not seen any of the movies before. Even if you missed one of the 21 previous Marvel films.
You would miss a moment here, yeah.
You would miss a moment. There would be a gap in your knowledge. And it isn't even just that you had to see the films once. You had to have been fanatical and kind of watch them repeatedly to get a lot of the allusions that they were making.
Which I think normally I would not appreciate, but in this case, like, I think this is an exception to the rule, right? Like, I think they were very clear about what they were doing this very purposefully.
Yes.
Like, to pick a random example, when Black Widow dies, spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
She's almost certainly coming back, so it doesn't matter. They cut to a shot of the Hulk, Bruce Banner, and he has this, like, you know, this reaction on his face. The movie never once gives you any clue that those characters had this quasi-relationship.
Right.
You just have to have picked it up from two movies ago.
Right.
And I respect that. I think that's fine.
For this. They totally leaned into it. All right, so let's get to the individual character arcs, and I'm going to try to keep us on topic.
All of the characters, though?
Let's talk about the character arcs for each of our six main Avengers. We won't hit every single person in the film because there's too many. So do you want to start with Tony or Captain America?
Tony.
All right, let's start with Iron Man's arc. I wrote about this for work, which is that as much as the ending gutted me, I thought it worked perfectly, and it was one of the rare character arcs that the film actually got right. So what happens is that Tony Stark is one of the ones that actually makes it out of the snap okay, right? Pepper survives, Happy survives, he comes back from space. And he has this, like, wonderful 5 years where he gets to have the family that he always wanted. He and Pepper reconcile. They have this adorable daughter. Like, and it's so hard to find good kid actors, and that kid actor was fantastic.
And he killed it.
Oh, my God.
Like, he's a great actor, but he killed it as the dad. Like, you can read it on his face. It is 100. He sells it 100%.
Exactly. He has the amount of time that he has to show you that he's a great dad is very little.
Very little, but...
But you buy it like 100%. Like, you're invested in that relationship within the first scene.
There's a lot of father and child stuff in the movie, so much that maybe it's an explicit theme in the movie. But that was the one that was the most, that didn't feel like just a movie thing.
Yeah. No. And like you said, Robert Downey Jr. is fantastic as an actor, and he totally sells it. So he gets this 5 years of familial bliss, like the stuff that he's always wanted. But he gives it up to help the Avengers go back in time, get the Infinity Stones, and makes the ultimate sacrifice at the end where he snaps his fingers and forfeits his life in the process. It brings everybody back. It defeats Thanos.
Did he know it was going to forfeit his life?
Yes.
Did he know the snap? How did he know that?
So there's a scene at the very end, and again, this is one of those things where if you haven't seen Infinity War, it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's Doctor Strange had told him there's only one chance out of like 14 million for us to win. And that very last scene, Iron Man looks at Strange
and he gives him
he gives him a one, like he raises one finger. So Tony knows, like, Tony is wondering, wait, is this what I have to do? He looks at Strange, and Strange says, this is our only chance, and it's all on you.
I buy all that, and I actually really like that scene from the first movie where he says, I've looked at 14 million possibilities, there's one that works. That was cool, and I liked that it paid off in the end. But why does it follow that Tony then knew he was going to die?
Because I think Tony suspected it. Like, I think that he knew... Like, his plan is, I can't take the glove off of him, but I can take all the Infinity Stones.
Yeah, how did he do that again? Does it happen fast?
I think it's like a little sleight of hand, you know? Again with this, like, getting into the weeds of things.
And that's why I bought it.
Just let it go.
He did an Iron Man thing, and he got all the things off.
So, yeah, well, he makes the glove, right? So he uses whatever Iron Man tech he does to make another Infinity Glove, basically, and then he gets them all. But yeah, I as much as it like broke my heart, because I think I'm one of the rare people that likes Iron Man as their favorite Avenger, I thought it was the best end for the character.
Yeah, I thought it, except for the very cheeseball funeral scene.
Oh, I loved it.
No, it was silly. They're like all lined up and the camera pans to one and the next. It was too much. They should have just been standing like people would actually stand at a funeral. That said, yes, I think you're right. I urge you all to read Hemel's piece in USA Today about this very thing. You're right. It paid off. It was I got it. I got verklempt.
And he had to, right? Because he created a whole bunch of messes beforehand. So this is really his only way of...
It was his redemption story.
Who is the next character you want to hit? Like I said, I want to save Steve till the end because we got a lot of time travel stuff we need to get into.
Let's talk about Black Widow, who... That was probably the only surprise in the movie for me.
Okay.
In a movie where a lot of things that happened, I was expecting.
Yeah.
And so with Black Widow, as you know, she sacrifices herself to get the Soul Stone.
To get the Soul Stone.
And her and Hawkeye have this borderline ridiculous scene where they're like, no, I'm going to die. No, I'm going to do it. No, fake out. And then I was like, oh, he's going to go over because he's an interesting person and character, yeah. and she's got another movie about her coming out. But she goes over and certainly seems dead,
yes.
which was a surprise.
Yeah, I thought it was super surprising because her death I was not expecting, but I was also not expecting to be as moved by it as I was. I thought the film did a really great job of giving her these like incredible human moments.
Yeah, one of the strongest like moments in the whole movie is when she's talking to Captain America.
Yeah.
And like the movie, all of these movies have never really explained why she does what she does, right? The rest of them are all aliens and, you know, profoundly bizarre people. But she's just, she was just an assassin for hire. Why has she dedicated her whole life to doing the superhero stuff? And she has that great scene where she's, and like, she's a good actor too. She really
she's
sells
fantastic,
it, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm getting a little sick of those scenes where, like, Captain America leans in the doorway. And
that's like
has
a whole
concerned
thing.
Face. Yeah,
yeah
it's
that's
like
a whole
it's
thing.
His go-to. But yeah, she delivers this whole, like, and you really believe, you're like, oh, she's trying to do this thing even past the point where it makes sense. And she really does seem, like, haggard and worn down and still managed to explain that, like, oh, she feels like this is her family. This is why she does this thing.
Yes.
I bought it. And it was a bummer when she died.
And so,
but she's going to come back.
Well, hold on. So before we get to how she comes back or if she
well,
does
she doesn't come
back. Come
back, but she's obviously going to come back.
Well, I wrote about this too, but which is that Black Widow takes on the role of like the kind of emotional work that women do all the time, which is trying to raise your ungrateful family.
Yes, you did.
While everybody else is off having their like crazy breakdowns or hiding from the world in the woods. But yeah, she has this wonderful scene where she's like crying and then she, you know, and then Steve comes in and kind of ruins it. But yes, they have this whole little moment. So you could see that this is where she says, like, this is a family that she never had. She's working really hard to keep it together. And a lot of interpretations of her dying have treated it as she is dying for Clint, which like technically is true. But I always interpret it as like she's dying for the rest of the Avengers. Because the Soul Stone is so important.
Yeah, but like, you know, he's got a family and something to live for and all that stuff.
Yeah, and that part did not sit well with me.
That she died instead of him?
Yeah, I just think, like you said, she's a much better character, but they're bringing her back. They'll bring her back for a prequel.
So is that what the movie of her is going to be, a prequel?
Yeah.
It's very unsatisfying, though.
Yeah, so it's a prequel. It isn't so much a continuation, but again, this is comics and these are weird things.
Yeah,
so there's
dies in the comics.
Exactly. So
also,
there's always a way to bring somebody back.
If in the end of the movie, maybe you don't want to get into this. If Captain America returned all the Soul Stones, like some sort of comic book FedEx,
yeah.
Does that mean they get Black Widow back? Is she undead?
No, she's not, apparently. So this is, again, this movie brings up more questions than it answers.
A lot of multi-dimensional.
All right. Moving on from Nat.
Oh, wait, but can we talk about her hair?
Oh, talk about her hair.
I have an issue with her hair.
Okay, how?
So, there's in the scene where it's 5 years later, she's the tattered remains of the Avengers, she's holding them together and she's eating microwave burritos. In that scene, she looks kind of, you know, she's a beautiful actress,
right.
But she looks a little beat down,
right.
She's not at her best. Her hair is kind of ratty and tatty. And it's half-dyed pink. And it's not pink in, like, a superheroes have pink hair kind of way. She's clearly... they're trying to say, like, oh, she's dyed it pink and it's half-grown out.
Yeah.
Why would she have dyed her hair pink? That makes no sense for that character and what she's going through. Why would she have gone out in the midst of post-apocalyptic catastrophe and gotten a pink dye job?
I mean, for the same reason Hawkeye got a mohawk, dude.
Well,
like,
we can come back to that. But you could at least understand why that character might have done that. The pink hair makes no... It was clearly a deliberate choice. It doesn't make any sense.
I always...
When would she do that and why? All her friends are dead. She's looking at the brink of catastrophe, and she goes out to the salon and says... Give me a pink haircut that she doesn't take care of.
I choose to interpret it as she's going back to her roots because she's always had that like flaming red hair.
What? That doesn't make it now. That's not it.
I'm not.
It's not
I
don't. Red, it's pink.
I agree with you. I actually have no idea why people made the hair choices
it's a
that
very
they
weird choice
that they did in this film. But
so
I will give you that.
The Hawkeye hair is a much bigger problem, and for on aesthetic grounds. But the Black Widow hair is a bigger problem for me on narrative grounds.
Right. Characteristically, does not seem to make a lot of sense.
No, it doesn't make a lick of sense.
Let's talk about Hawkeye.
All right. Jeremy Renner is a profoundly uninteresting actor. And I don't mean to be rude. I'm sure he's a nice man. There might be some smaller genres of film he would do well in. But he's in the Mission Impossibles and he's in the Marvels. And he's just not very interesting.
Yeah.
And he's kind of a protagonist, and like they've trying to give the guy more to do. I don't care.
It is easily the most uninteresting arc out of all of the Avengers.
Yeah.
They gave him a family, and then they took his family away, and they made him this mass murdering vigilante that now has a sword that he uses.
Right, yeah. It was bad enough that he's the bow and arrow guy fighting gods. They took even that shticky in a fun way. They took that away and gave him a sword.
Yeah, out of all of the characterizations, Hawkeye is just not interesting, and he has not been very interesting from the very beginning.
And the movie's 3 hours long. It's completely stuffed. For the most part, though, it's all necessary and it goes quickly. But yeah, the whole like thing with him, it's out of nowhere, and he's in this futuristic Tokyo, and he kills a guy, and
it didn't make a lick of sense.
Chopped it right out.
I'm not even mad about it because there just was not a lot to do with that character. Like, his family is the only thing that's interesting about him. And
yeah, he has no relationship with anyone else in the team.
Aside from Nat.
But even that, like, there was more interesting relationships with her and other characters.
Exactly, yeah.
And really, in the early films, her and Hawkeye are buddies in there, but they replaced that with her and Captain America, which is a more interesting friendship.
Way more interesting.
Yeah, and his family, they're not even real people. Like, Cardellini, who plays his wife, she's been great and stuff, but she doesn't ever has any lines or scenes.
Yeah.
She just smiles wistfully.
She is given criminally, like, underused for how good of an actress she is.
Yeah, like, you play the wife across the way.
Like, literally, she's like, her one line is about hot dogs, right? So it's so frustrating.
But now his hair.
Let's talk about his hair.
Is there any point in talking about it? Have we not, as a nation, talked it to death?
I actually might be the only person that's like, all right, he got a cool haircut.
But why? His family died. He sunk into a terrible depression. He lost his mind. He became a murderous vigilante. All right, he got a sword. Where in all that did he go into the salon and say, give me this wackadoodle haircut?
I don't know.
Because you can't give yourself that haircut.
No, I mean, in situations like this, I feel like characters do two things. They either grow out their hair, they stop getting it cut.
Yes, beard, long hair.
You go John Wick, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you just do that.
Or you shave it all off. You don't give it a crazy,
crazy
Neuromancer V. Again, both his hair and the Black Widow hair, someone associated with the film, a costume designer, said, these are deliberate things I want to do to convey something about these characters, but I don't know what it is.
I think they're meant to be like, oh, this person is lost, but it does not work.
Yeah, like I said, if he had a beard and like unkempt hair or shaved it all off, people do that, and that would convey the same thing.
So to bring this back to Infinity War for a sec, like when we see Captain America in Infinity War, his hair is longer and he's gotten a beard, which kind of shows us that like, okay, he stopped doing the military thing.
He's retreated from the world, Al Gore style.
Exactly, like he's retreated, and those choices made a lot of sense. But the choices for Black Widow and Hawkeye make no sense.
No sense at all.
Okay. We've hit three of our six main Avengers. I want to talk about Thor.
Yes. So, one of my favorite movies of all the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
At least half of them I have major problems with. But Thor Ragnarok is one of the best, if not the best.
Yes.
It took this kind of like pointless quasi-comic relief Deus Ex Machina character. Because the first two Thor movies were not so great. He didn't have a lot to do in the Avengers movies. And it made him really interesting.
Right.
And then, and that movie was clearly one of the big forerunners to this one. It set up a lot of stuff. But, like, he's such a joke. And he has such a pointless presence in this movie. And the fact that he's fat and out of shape, you could have had him be just out of shape.
Yeah.
The fact that he's got, like, this obvious comical beer gut is so played for laughs that it almost seemed like a weird misstep to do that.
I agree. I think that Fat Thor does not work for me, and it does not work for me for pretty much the same reasons, which is that I appreciated where they tried to take the character, which is that this is a dude who has lost everything.
But they didn't take it seriously.
Right.
But
they played it for laughs.
Yeah, totally.
Which is what is so annoying, right? Because this is a dude that has lost everything, right? Like, his mom died, his brother died, he lost half his people that he was supposed to save. Like, he is, like, deeply, deeply depressed, which I think Chris Hemsworth as an actor tries to convey, and they try to convey that in the movie too, but the first time you see him, they play it for laughs, and it undercuts everything else that they're trying to do.
Yeah, I don't remember who goes to get him, but...
Hulk and Rocket.
Yeah, they go to get him, and the fact that he's in this state...
Yeah.
But yeah, but they make it so stupid.
Right, that there's like real emotional pain buried underneath it, but the fact that they play those first few moments for laughs is really, really
upsetting.
And
I think they play it all for laughs, like even when he... like, because then they all team up and they go find him. He goes with Rocket... back to Asgard in time, and they even play that for laughs. Like he like runs off crying, and it's not supposed to be serious or sad. It's supposed to be funny,
right? And the thing is that I feel bad because I think Chris Hemsworth tried to make it serious. Like he does a good job in the scenes where he's like very upset, like with his mom. There's certain times where you can see that come through, but the entire film kind of plays his like mental distress for laughs, and I hate that.
Yeah, and why, like, that's a weird choice, right?
It's
like,
terrible choice.
Why would they, did they just think, oh, there's too much sad, we need a funny subplot here and we'll just make that be Thor?
Yeah, and there's I think that there might be an underlying reason, right? One of the good things, I guess, is that they don't make him drop the weight. Like, he's still worthy of holding the hammer, even though he put on a few pounds. That, I think, is okay, but...
but have him just literally put on a few pounds. Don't make him heavy, like, this big, like, comical pot belly.
Exactly. It doesn't work. I think that they had...
it was jarring.
They had such a good thing going with Ragnarok that they did not carry it through to Endgame.
No, including his hair. His hair was great in Ragnarok, and now he's back to...
I'm very upset that they robbed us of hot Thor, okay?
I am too.
I'm very upset.
One of the sort of beats of the movie is that, like, you know, it's a superhero movie, so there's a lot of, like, fisticuff. There's a lot of, like, who can punch harder? They set Thanos up as, like, the hardest punching dude in the galaxy. Thor and the Hulk, who were the most powerful Avengers by a wide margin, are kind of like, I wonder if they're like deliberately sidelined from the narrative. Because they have Captain Marvel now, who they don't do much with, but they clearly want her to be the toughest.
Right.
So maybe they made Thor and Hulk comic relief characters so there wouldn't be better punchers around to do some punching.
I think so. I think to give Iron Man and Captain America something to do, they kind of sidelined both of them. But I think that also works.
I mean, you could have done it in a more, you know, a better way.
No, I agree with this. I think Thor has actually been done a great disservice in Endgame, but the only redeeming factor of that is that there's a very good chance that he shows up in the Guardians sequel or he gets another Thor movie. But again, I think my conclusion is Thor...
Hard done by.
Let's talk about Bruce Banner. The only one who kind of is on a better side after the 5 years. Like, he seems like at peace with himself.
Yes, so as we all know, and this is taken from the comics, I believe. I was not a comic reader of that character, but he has managed to merge his Bruce Banner and Hulk personalities, and he's now the personality of Bruce Banner with the monstrous physique of the Hulk. I will say that, like you said, I don't know if that works, but...
did not work for me.
Well, so the Hulk could be a really one-note character. The only thing that redeems the Hulk is, he's this unstoppable, smashing rage machine, but sometimes he's this tortured guy, which Mark Ruffalo sells well. But you can only do that so much, and they did it a lot in the first two Avengers movies.
Yeah.
And I thought it really worked, and it was great, but you can't just keep doing it.
I guess that's right.
So then in Thor Ragnarok, they advance the character in a great way, which is like, oh, Hulk has taken over, and now he has the intelligence of a two-year-old, but he's still the Hulk.
Right.
So that was an interesting thing to do with that character. And then Hulk becomes a character of his own with some pathos to him. So I can see, the filmmaker sitting down and being like, all right, we don't want to just revert back to, like, the Hulk-Bruce Banner dichotomy. We also don't want to just, like, bring Hulk from Thor Ragnarok in. What else can we do with them?
Yeah.
And it's Professor Hulk.
Yeah. It's kind of like the Beast, I think, in the X-Men movies, where he's that big...
right, yes.
Blue guy. The thing is that I really like the anxiousness and earnestness of Bruce Banner as like
funny.
A person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's funny, and I like his interactions with the rest of the Avengers. So to kind of subsume that entire personality was a little jarring. Like, I wanted more Bruce Banner, less mix of the Hulk and Bruce Banner.
Yeah, like, Bruce Banner's a great character. He plays him well. And then the Hulk comes out to commit mayhem and physical destruction. But, the Hulk doesn't do any of that stuff. Like, that's the Hulk's whole point in these movies, is to destroy things.
He just doesn't smash.
He doesn't smash anything.
No. So are we ready to talk about Steve? Because this is going to send us into our time
well,
travel.
Well, before we talk about Steve Rogers, Captain America, there are two other characters who are not sort of core original Avengers, but who play large parts in this movie. Ant-Man plays a big role.
Yes.
And Nebula plays a big role.
Yes.
How do you feel about those two characters and how they worked in the film?
I think that I really liked those two characters at the end of Endgame, and I actually am very surprised by the fact that they work so well. I actually really loved Paul Rudd as Ant-Man.
Yeah, Paul Rudd is killing it as Ant-Man.
He has fantastic chemistry with the rest of the group.
And he does his comic relief thing without it seeming out of place.
Yeah, he integrates really well, and he's just the right amount of scene stealer, right? Like, he doesn't take the focus away, but he gives you just enough levity for it to be funny. And I'm really surprised by how much I liked Karen Gillan as Nebula. That actually did work for me.
Yeah, it grew, like, I found her character downright annoying in the Guardians movies.
Yes.
Because she's so, like, she's not like really fleshed out. She's, like, relentless, but for no good reason.
Right, she's a robot. She has, like, no real motivation.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think this movie leaned, like, they wrote more for her, and like this sense of her being an awkward sort of quasi person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that worked pretty well. And I really liked the when she is interacting with her earlier self.
Whoa, yeah.
Yeah, and you get the sense of like, oh, this, you know, in the earlier movies it's just like pain. They just pile on all the terrible things that have been done to her. And in this movie, like when the scenes when she's talking to her earlier self and there's that betrayal, yeah, I thought that all that stuff shouldn't work because it's too complicated, but it kind
of
does work.
And I think that one of the key moments of getting the audience to empathize with Nebula is that first scene between her and Iron Man, where, again, Robert Downey Jr. is fantastic as an actor because they're just playing a little game of football, but you see how comically like, Nebula does not know how to play this child's game.
Right.
And Robert Downey Jr. is, in effect, like a father to her and kind of helping her along and be like,
I don't know about that.
Yeah,
I think they just, there was no one else to talk
to.
No.
But you can see he's being, like, very, like, generous with, like, nope, this is how you play this game. And was it fun? So I think that builds a lot of relationship. All right. Are we ready to tackle the Steve Rogers Captain America thing?
I don't think I have as much I have much feeling about this as you do. So you wrote a very well received piece about Captain America's character arc.
Yes.
What are your feelings on it? Are they complex?
They are very complicated, and I had said this before, which is that the only thing that I did not want to see in Endgame was Steve Rogers travel back in time to be with Peggy.
Gotcha. Zoink.
Zoinks. I'll try to sum it up in one sentence, which is that nobody begrudges Steve Rogers, Captain America, a happy ending.
Get back to work, Captain America. We're not paying you to dance.
But there was no way to give him a happy ending that was in character.
Right. So your argument, which I agree with, is that his character is ultimately about duty and sacrifice. And then here, at the end of all things, he's basically the main character. He throws it all away to give himself a happy life.
Yeah, it is. I think the screenwriters said that Captain America has earned the right to put down the shield. And to a degree, I agree with that.
But the way in which he puts down the shield negates everything he did before.
It just negates everything.
Because of time travel.
So Captain America's character arc is basically that, they fail, right? They failed with Thanos, and even before they failed with Thanos, he kind of just fucked off after Civil War because he didn't want to sign the Accords or whatever. So he's just been kind of out of it for a very long time. He's been avenging, but avenging in secret, like not a part of the whole thing. So by the time he does come back, people are resentful, like Tony Stark is, right? Like, you were not here, and he spends 5 years, I guess, being a grief counselor. I don't know what he's been doing for 5 years. Like,
no, I don't know what any of them did for 5 years.
Yeah, he's like living in New York and just trying to get on with his life, but apparently not doing a very good job of getting on with his life. So from Civil War until now, my man hasn't done a whole lot except like wallow. So I'm not feeling super sympathetic. And then he goes back in time to return the Infinity Stones, and he decides to stay.
To stay back in time.
Back in time to have a life with Peggy. And none of it makes a damn lick of sense to me at all.
Now, here's where there's no way to not talk about the time travel.
And now let's get into time travel.
So, Captain America goes back in time, decides to stay there with his girlfriend.
Yes.
Which one thing that I didn't realize until it was I read or heard something that the movies in the past have alluded to her getting married, but never showed or mentioned the identity of the husband.
Yes.
Which suggests that maybe all along they left this hole open for them, which I appreciate that sort of forethought. But because he went back in time and stayed, does that then mean there was no Captain America in the past to do all the heroic things that we know that he did? Or were there two Captain Americas?
Okay, so if we are going by the logic of the film...
The movie's own rules.
The movie's own rules is that there is a way for there to be two at the same time. Because
we see that in the film.
We see that in the film with Nebula. Nebula travels back in time and
meets...
We see
it with Captain America. He fights himself.
Right, he fights himself. So there's definitely ways for two people to exist in the same timeline. But what the film also tells us is that traveling back in time does not change the past or the future. It just creates an alternate timeline. So... what I think the film is saying is that Captain America travels back in time and just creates an alternate timeline for himself, which means that it doesn't change anything that happened in the films that we saw. It just means that there's a branch that comes out and Captain America gets his own timeline. But then I don't understand how it reconnects at the very end where he gives Sam the shield, right? Yeah. Like, you can't do both.
Yeah, by the logic of the film, when he went back to 1940 or whatever and decided to not be Captain America and just live life like a normal human being, that set off a new timeline in which there was no Captain America.
Right, because that Captain America is, like, buried in the ocean.
So, yes, in that case, how did that old man walk back? See, it actually makes more sense if the whole time he was living his life not as Captain America, but the original Captain America that he once was still doing all the Captain America stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I'm saying, is that once you try to apply the tiniest bit of logic to it, it crumbles.
And also, that would mean that in the movie when he goes back to get the first Infinity Stone and he fights himself... the other version of him is still there somewhere living his quiet life. So there are three Captain Americas at that point in time.
This is what we talked about earlier. There's like, there could potentially be three Captain Americas. And every change you make doesn't change what happened in the past. It just launches a new timeline.
Which is the Back to the Future 2 theory of time travel. Essentially, the entire movie is a reboot of Back to the Future 2.
Right. And this is why I hate time travel, because there's no way for it to logically make any sense. But the problem is that the rest of the Avengers films have been, to a degree, like, they've tried to be very real, right? They've been based in reality. Like, Iron Man creates his suit, but he creates it, like, using science, right? And
we're supposed to believe this takes place in the real world.
We're supposed, exactly. And this time travel shit just blows it right out of the water, where they've manipulated everything because they want to give Steve his happy ending, which is fine, but none of it makes a goddamn lick of sense.
Well, so are we talking about the time travel now?
Yeah, let's talk about time travel now.
So one thing that I like about the movie that shouldn't work but does, and if you told me this before I'd seen it, I would have poo-pooed, and that is, of course, the characters go back and actually revisit... scenes from previous movies.
Which is fantastic.
Which shouldn't work, but for the movie that this is, this, like, we're summing up 10 years of these movies you've been forced to watch by cultural law, to lean hard into that and actually take you back into these movies and the characters. Again, Back to the Future 2 did it first and possibly better, because that's a great movie. But this movie does it pretty well, where you're seeing these scenes, these iconic scenes from the original movies.
They're fantastic.
From a new angle, and it's cool, and it's well done.
Well, I was going to say that the part in the film that I actually got really excited about is that elevator scene that they do.
Yeah, that's a great bit!
It's a callback to Captain America, Winter Soldier, and it's, you know, reminiscent of this incredible fight scene that he has in the elevator, but that's phenomenal, right? Like, it's really, really funny.
There's this great elevator fight scene in the second Captain America movie, and in the new movie, he's in an elevator with the same people, and that they're even doing the same movements, and it's scripted the same. You're like, oh, they're going to have another elevator fight. Yeah. That's weird. And then he says, Hail Hydra, and they let him go, and that's funny.
And there's also a great bit, which I thought worked really well, is America's Ass, where they finally let Steve Rogers have, like, a little bit of humor, which we haven't seen in a lot of films. So... that part of time travel I was okay with, but it really is the end where they either needed to not bring back old Steve and just kind of show us him dancing with Peggy and just leave it at that, Or they needed to commit to being vague about it and let the audience figure out that, oh, he did go back in time and stay with Peggy. Because they allude to that throughout the film, right? He's looking at her picture.
Yes.
You know, he sees her in 1970. They gave you enough clues to let you figure out that he
was
going to stay.
But the character is more interesting if they, you know, he got stuck in time the first time, the normal way, quote unquote. He just, yeah, he's got some sadness he carries around. That's kind of better than what they end up doing with him.
Well, the way I look at it is that, like, 1945 was only great for white guys, right? Like, it sucks to be a black dude in 1945.
Well, he's the whitest guy.
Yeah, he's, like, the whitest guy. Sucks to be a lady in 1945. So he better, even if he stayed under the radar as Captain America, he better have been a raging civil rights activist.
Yeah, I would think he would, given the character we know. Also, when he was old, and the old person makeup or the digital aging they did was fantastic. That normally doesn't look good, but you could even tell.
It looked really good.
But how did he get there as an old person? Like, however he got back to that time stream, how did he make his way through this deserted battleground far from the nearest bus station?
Yeah, he's like an old guy.
And he would. That means at some point, while they're doing all this stuff, he walked up 20 feet away from them, and an old guy walked up and sat on a bench, and these supernatural beings just didn't notice.
Again, this is a thing. Well, the storyline that it underserves, like when you play up Steve and Peggy, you lose Steve and Bucky. And I know there's a huge part of the Avengers fandom that loves Bucky. Oh,
if there's any character slash actor more boring and pointless than Hawkeye, it's Bucky.
Here's the thing.
Unlikable. The fact that he had no lines in this movie, for me, was the greatest aspect of it. I didn't have to look at that guy and listen to that guy.
I don't disagree with you. I've never been a huge Bucky fan, but that storyline, they played up that friendship for like 2.5 films.
They did, but I never bought it. It's like, why does he like that guy? That guy's very unpleasant to be around. He never says anything nice to him. He never laughs. He never smiles. He has no redeeming qualities.
He's not great.
Also, why did he make the Falcon Captain America?
I think that happens in the comics.
So. Yeah, but it doesn't. Look, so, having not read the comics, like, the Falcon already has a shtick. So here, like, oh, he's going to give him a new shtick. But the point of Captain America isn't just the shield. It's that he's a super soldier. He's basically invulnerable. He's super strong. But Falcon's just a guy.
Well, here's the thing. I don't think the point of Captain America is a super soldierness. I think the point of Captain America is this, like, unimpeachable moral centrality. And I think that's Sam Wilson.
Yes, but what Captain America does to enact his superheroism is punch and fight and kick and get shot with... He does all these things that Falcon's going to get killed doing. Like, Falcon's a regular guy.
I know.
He only survives these epic space battles because he's flying around with his wings. He's going to get punched by one space monster, and that's going to be the end of him, shield or no shield.
I think he's definitely worthy of carrying the shield.
He might be worthy of carrying the shield, but it seems like a death sentence to give it to him.
I agree.
Like, look what Captain America did in the movie and fight scenes. Falcon wouldn't survive any of that.
No, yeah, without the wings.
He'd get punched once by a space monster, and he's dead. Thanks, buddy.
All right. The one thing I do want to talk about is best duos. That's the one thing that I want to make sure.
Oh, because they divide them up into surprising pairings.
They divide, I think a lot of these films are about breaking people up into surprising duos.
Yeah, did you? What was a duo that you enjoyed?
There's two that I enjoyed quite a bit. My favorite, obviously, is the Steve-Tony friendship. But, like, I think that they've done a really good job with how that's played out throughout those films.
Yeah, I would say those two are the main characters of the Avengers movies.
I feel like they're the main characters, and I think that given the fact that they actually only have a handful of scenes throughout all of the films, that friendship has really kind of cemented the group and driven the group.
Yes, but what I didn't buy, did we talk about why the 5 years thing is so dumb?
No, but you can go ahead and...
All right, let me briefly say why the 5 years thing is so dumb.
Yeah, do it.
It leads up to why I think that their scenes didn't work great for me.
Yeah.
So they wanted to have this gap of time, right? The movie, as you say, the movie picks up right where the last one left off, and the Avengers are still... And I think that opening scenes work really well, right? They're not even really thinking. They're just like, well, we're superheroes. We got to run and fight and, you know, go around the world in our planes and chop the guy's head off. So they're just still doing their shtick.
Right.
And then in a great way, the film pulls the rug out. Hey, your shtick didn't work. It didn't make any difference.
Right.
And they're all kind of crushed. Time passes.
Yes.
And then they bring Ant-Man up. And again, this is a great bit of film writing, right? Because they want to show us the world in the aftermath of the snap. all of the characters have been living through it, so they find a character who hasn't lived through it but also isn't dead. Ant-Man comes, and I didn't really understand this, but he was trapped in the quantum realm.
He is wrapped in the quantum realm, yeah, and so he gets brought back out.
So he doesn't know what's happened. He thinks it's only been 5 hours, but it's actually been a ton of time. So he's wandering around this like borderline post-apocalyptic United States.
Right.
And he's a great avatar for the viewer because he's like, what the hell happened here?
Right.
But here's the thing, one of the many things that bother me about that. So they wanted to have this time, this expanse of time. In the aftermath of a terrible trauma like that one, for 9 to 12 months, people would be traumatized and shell-shocked. The trash wouldn't get picked up. Boats would float in the harbor. Houses would be abandoned. Power wouldn't be on. People would still be grieving and bursting into tears, but not for 5 years. That doesn't even make any sense. Like, that's not how things are.
You think that the world would have actually gotten on a lot
quicker.
Of course
it would. Like, yeah. Captain America's talking to, like, hey, I heard you went on a date. And he's like, yeah, I went on a date, and I wept uncontrollably, and I hated too. Again, that would happen 3, 4, 5, 6 months after the snap.
Yeah.
It wouldn't happen 5 years later. So when I saw them do that, like, it just didn't make sense to me. It's like, why is he walking through these garbage? Nobody picked up garbage out of their streets for 5 years?
Well, there's a scene is that, you know, this kid rides by on a bike and just doesn't even say hi to him.
Yeah, he's like, man, I've been so mad for 5 years, even though I'm 13.
He's like 8 years old. Like, he would not even have remembered the world before
the snap.
So I'm
trying to figure out why the filmmakers made that. Like, it didn't need to be 5 years. The only possible reason I could think why it needed to be 5 years, because when we get to Tony Stark, he's got a kid.
He's got a kid. Yeah.
So we know the whole point of the movie is going to be them undoing the snap. How do you make that? So they're going to do tactical and strategic things to undo it, which will be entertaining to watch. How do you give it emotional weight? Oh, I see what they're doing. They're making it an ethical quandary. Like, 5 years is a lot of time. People have remarried and moved on, and they've adapted, and they've had children. Now the ethical quandary will be undoing all that. But the movie never goes there. It only the only thing it treats as important is one guy's kid. There's 100,000 other kids. What's going to happen to them? I thought that was going to be one of the whole points of it, and it wasn't. They were not interested in talking about that.
No, because,
so why 5 years?
Well, because what they needed to do was set up that a significant amount of time has passed, but the world has not been able to move on.
Why has it not been able to move on?
I think you are heartless.
No! Let's say, God forbid, you lost half the people who are important to you.
Right.
You would grieve, but you wouldn't be a useless wreck for 5 years.
Well, I think what the film is trying to posit, which is that basically there, because this happened, it isn't even so much about the individual loss as it is about the magnitude of the loss, right? There's a thing where they say that there's no baseball anymore, right? Like, I miss the Mets. Like, that's a whole running joke with that guy. And I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure that they would have actually, MLB would have started.
People would have started playing baseball after a year or two.
But the whole point is to say that even though Tony Stark was one of the lucky ones to be able to get on with his life, much of the world had not been able to move on, which is why they had to bring everybody back.
So this brings me back to the Tony Stark, Steve Rogers friendship.
Right.
In the previous, I don't remember which one it was, but there's one where maybe the last Avengers, the last Captain America, can't remember. But yeah, we get that great scene where, you know, he says that Bucky was his best friend and Tony Stark's I thought I was your best friend.
Yeah.
Or I thought we were friends. And then they have this terrible fight. So I buy that fight has split their friendship apart, but they still at the deep down care about each other, respect each other.
Yeah.
So again, if the aftermath of the snap had picked up 11 months later, I could have bought that dissolution is still raw.
But you're saying that you can't buy
5 years later. They've both had 5 years of life. All these terrible things that happened. One of them became a dad. They're still holding on to that exact same emotional space. That, like, they're not nine. That just, like, so many problems would have just been solved by making it 11 months.
I think, I don't know. Well, they needed 5 years because they needed Tony to have a relationship with his kid, right? Like, they needed enough time for him and Pepper to get married and get pregnant and then have a baby that's 4 and cute. So that's 5 years.
Like, you could have just had he could have loved a baby
Whatever.
As much as loved his 4-year-old.
I'm just saying that.
Russo brothers, if you're listening to this podcast, I rethink that.
There's the whole point now that you've completely digressed us, which is that, yes.
What were we talking about?
Carrying on this resentment for 5 years. Like, we're talking about best duos, which.
Yes, best duos. So, I didn't really buy their anger has just solidified where it was despite far more serious things happening in their lives.
I don't think it's that. I think there's a lot of stuff in the film that doesn't get said, which is that first emotional scene where Tony Stark is, like, really angry about what's happened resplits their friendship all over again. It isn't just about him, you know, protecting Bucky. It's about the fact that, like, Cap fucked off and left and was not there to help defeat Thanos. So there's that resentment, which lingers for however long. I don't think that they didn't see each other for 5 years. I just think that nobody was really talking to anybody very closely.
So what were some other duos that you thought worked and did not work?
So the other duo that I really, really liked in this film and makes me appreciate in past films is the Steve and Natasha relationship. I love that their relationship is, if you wanted to, you could read it as romantic at some point, but it's mostly just a very solid friendship.
Yeah,
between,
it feels real.
Like, it feels like a very real friendship between two people, a man and a woman, that's not romantic,
yeah,
which we never see
in
films.
And it doesn't even feel like it's about to be or should have been romantic, you know.
Yeah, it's like maybe they hooked up every now and then, who knows?
No, that's not, you think that's there?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not, I never see that. When I look at those scenes, I never read it that way, but I know some people do, but the bond is there, right?
Yes.
Like, they have this, like, great emotional bond. Like, you see it in that scene where, you know, she's not surprised when
she's
he comes in.
Hair.
She's got the hair, and she pushes half her sandwich to him. Like, there's all these great beats between both of those characters.
Yes, it feels very, very brother and sisterly.
Yeah, so I think those are the two that work really well.
Well, here's another thing that I thought was a little weak, and that was the big final battle. So it just, I was really surprised at how formulaic and, like, we had seen all that stuff already in a couple of different movies. And it was so unnecessary, right? Like, the movie sets up Thanos as this big villain. And, like, even though I think this movie is much stronger than Infinity War, Thanos is a much more interesting bad guy in the first one.
Yeah.
In this one, he's just a generic bad guy.
He's
going to destroy, we have to beat him. The previous movies set up, like, he's got these henchmen. He's got this band of super badasses. In at least two previous movies, I think, we've seen these badasses, and we have been taught that they are very tough, they are very hard to kill, our heroes are right to be scared of them. In this movie, they're just cannon fodder. They all get, like, tossed and thrown away, and we see all those big flying monsters that we've seen, like, three times already. We see the literal exact same scene from Black Panther, when, like, oh, all the bad guys are running down one hill, but up, all the good guys are running down another hill. And I was really surprised at how uninspired a choice that was, right? Like,
yeah,
there's a big fight scene with Thanos himself. That could have been that's all you need.
This fight scene to me was not about any of the actual fighting, because the entire purpose of that scene was that long pan of all the superheroes lining up behind Captain America. And that was the only purpose. Like,
when all came back.
Right, when all the portals opened.
Yeah, that was a little
Well,
silly.
You see, the way it works is, you know, Steve is, or Captain America is standing there just by himself, broken shield. Like, he's like the epitome of the lone man against all the evil in the world. And then you hear, you know, on your left, Sam Wilson, all the portals start coming up. That moment really worked for me. And that was the only purpose of that scene, was for him to finally say.
But to build a 20-minute battle to have a one-second strong moment.
I thought the battle was fine. I was actually surprised.
What was the coolest thing that happened in that battle? What was cool about it?
I actually really liked that they used the Infinity Gauntlet as, like, a football. Like, they literally...
Oh, no, that was so dumb! How did you like that?
I liked it because it was so stupid.
Hey, here's all the characters who weren't in this movie, and they're throwing the thing, and it was...
It was comic booky. I think that it's funny because they basically, it's like a game of football, right? Like, the Infinity Gauntlet is a football, and they just needed to get to the other side of the end zone.
That was silly.
It's like a superhero centerfold, right? That brings them all in. There's obviously more firepower on the superhero side.
But the movie would have been 20 minutes shorter and, to me, more satisfying if the last couple standing Avengers had beaten Thanos and Tony Stark sacrificed himself. I have some questions.
Okay, let's start with
that I didn't understand.
All right, let's do it.
All right, so the Infinity Stone brings back everybody who died. except a couple people that it can't bring back for reasons that are unclear to me. So the Vision died and Black Widow died, and they died somehow in a different way than all the people who died in the snap.
Yeah.
But why? Why doesn't it make any sense? Metaphysically, what's the difference?
So the Infinity Stones, so when Tony Stark snaps his fingers with all six Infinity Stones, it only brings back people who got dusted. It only brings back the people who were alive when the snap happened.
So the snap that Tony Stark does undoes the previous snap.
Yes, but Vision does not die in the snap. Vision died because he got the stone pulled out of his head.
Vision,
Loki
Black
died.
Widow, Loki.
Loki died because Thanos crushed his neck.
And Gamora.
And Gamora died because she was sacrificed to the Soul Stone. So those people do not come back.
But why? If the Infinity Gauntlet has infinite power, why can't he bring them back too?
So here's, because he said he tried and he couldn't do it.
He said that? When did
he
say that?
He said, the Hulk says that at the end, at Tony Stark's funeral. He's like, I tried really hard to bring back Natasha, and it didn't work.
I thought he was talking, like, because at one point he puts it on, he can't overcome the force of it and snap. I thought that's what he was saying.
No,
I couldn't.
No, he said he tried to bring Natasha back, but he didn't. So the theory, what I've heard, is that apparently people who vanished in the snap were all living in some alternate dimension. Like,
so
they didn't
dimensions.
Actually die. They were in, like, in some limbo area. So that's why they could bring them back.
So Gamora was one of the people who died for real, not
for
just
real.
Died in the snap.
Yeah.
Now they pull her back out of, they pull an older version of her back into the future.
Yeah.
Does that mean that character's back for the movies now?
I don't know. I think we're going to have to wait for the Guardians film. But there's always, the potential is that, yes, this is not the Gamora that died. This is just a Gamora from the past.
Before she died.
Before she died.
So they could do that with any
anybody.
Of the
Yeah. And this is my problem with time travel, which is that
there's no stakes
you,
anymore.
There's no stakes, because if you wanted to bring Tony Stark back, you could just take an
you
Infinity Stone, go back a couple of years before he died, and just yank him into the future so that he can meet his daughter.
Oh, super dumb moment that I will forgive in the final fight scene.
Okay.
All the lady heroes at one point pose and look at the camera.
Yeah.
Monstrously stupid.
Yeah, I thought it was pandering.
It was extremely pandering. Although, James, our mutual friend, took his 13-year-old daughter, and he said that she was squealing with that moment. I will forgive it solely on those grounds.
I think that for young girls to see that, I think that it is super empowering. I just think that it was not as well done as it was done in Infinity War.
Just do it. Don't put a big, you know, don't ring the bell about it.
In Infinity War, there's this lovely scene where, you know, Black Widow stands up and says, she's not alone, and you get all these ladies coming in to help.
What other questions do I have?
Do you have any? Does this film change your opinion about the franchise in any way?
No. Like we said earlier, like, I think this is... They set out to, like, hey, we've made, you know, 15, 20 movies.
Yeah.
Let's make one big honking one that is a reward for the people that like these movies and have watched them all obsessively.
Yes.
And big success doing that.
I think that I really liked Endgame. I've come around to the Steve Peggy ending, even though it makes no flippin' sense whatsoever to me, because... basically, you have to appreciate it for the emotion that it brings versus, like, any kind of narrative logic.
It's fan service.
It is, but it's the worst kind of
fan service. It's the worst kind of
fan service,
yes.
It's just, like, the worst kind of fan
service. So, as many of our listeners will no doubt know, fan service is when the creators, filmmakers, whatever you have, make choices in their work merely to make fans happy and applaud, whether it serves the story or a greater artistic and cultural purpose or not. Yes, this definitely seemed like that.
Yes, and my only worry is that I hope I don't hate this in like 5 years. One thing, so the Hunger Games franchise is a good example, is that the last scene of the Hunger Games franchise ruined the entire film series for me.
What happens in the end of that one?
She just like gives up being awesome to like stay home with freaking PETA, who I hated anyway.
Oh, right, yeah, PETA.
I was just like,
God,
PETA,
go
what?
With the boring whiny one.
Yeah, he just went with the boring whiny one.
He's the Hawkeye of those movies.
Anything to me that ends with just this like, hey, they lived in domestic bliss, I find very unsatisfying. I hope that we get to see little iterations of Steve Rogers just like at least messing stuff up, you know? The whole time travel thing is just ludicrous.
Yeah, you really can't look too hard at it.
You absolutely cannot look too hard at it. You just have to kind of let your eyes glaze over and accept it for what it is, which is that Tony Stark had a great 5 years with his family and then had a very noble and earned death. And then Steve Rogers went back in time to chill and be a stay-at-home dad, I guess. Who knows?
And then everybody that Tony Stark knew lined up in a very awkward fashion on a hill wearing all black.
All right, I think we're ready to wrap this up.
Well, to those of you who have listened this long, I know you have a lot of other Avengers Endgame podcasts to get to. I think this one probably did not reward your time, depending on how much of this Hemel edits out. We've been talking for, it looks like, 6.5 hours now by my watch. Hopefully she'll cut a few of that before it gets to you.
I'm not cutting any of it. Thank you guys for listening. Again, this is a bonus episode, so please like and rate us on iTunes and subscribe where you can and where you listen to podcasts.
If you don't subscribe, you won't know about season 3, which we've been working on really hard and is coming out soon.
Diligently working on.
And were that true, we could give you some sort of hint, but it is not true. But it will be true at some point in the future.
It's happening.
At that point, there will be 2 timelines. One in which we have not given the matter any thought, and the other which we have been working really hard on it. Those waveforms will collapse at some point in the future, and you will want to be subscribed when they do.
Thanks for listening.